Beruchim Abayim, ladies. I'm sorry about the delay, technical difficulties. We're studying Parashat Vayishlach. Parashat Vayishlach is the classic confrontation between Yaakov and Esav, which is not only an historical event that happened thousands of years ago, but it has meaning until our time, I should say, specifically in our time. We have a famous rule when we study Chumash. Ma'aseh avot siman lebanim. The Ramban says this. Whatever Avraham and Yitzhak and Yaakov went through in their lives, they were actually preparing history, what was going to happen and is going to happen to their children. Which means these events are not isolated incidents that happened once. If it happened to Yaakov, that means this is going to be the model. This is going to be the pattern that's going to follow throughout the generations. And we see in this parasha a confrontation between Yaakov and Esav, which is the confrontation between Jews and Gentiles. And it is the parasha of how Jews and Gentiles are going to deal with each other during the exile. Of course, Hachamim tell us that there are two types of exiles that the Jews can be in. Yaakov Abinu, when he's praying to be saved from Esav and his 400 soldiers or chieftains, he asks God, please God, save me from my brother, from Esav. And Hakamim learned from those words, my brother Esav, it's a double language. He only had one brother. Just say, save me from my brother. Or save me from Esav. Why does he say, save me from my brother, from Esav? Hakamim over here learned a phenomenal concept that Esav, Goyim, have two faces. Sometimes they appear as Esav, the brute, Esav, the violent one, and he comes against us with his concentration camps, Alechem, and his pogroms, and his inquisitions, and his Kristallnacht. That's Esav. And we all know that Esav, and we're all fearful of that Esav, specifically in our time where we see the rise of anti-Semitism. We're all wary of such incidents and such situations. But that's the facts. Esav does have that nature towards the Jew that never changed. And Yaakov Abinu was praying that Esav should not appear as that violent person and come and decimate him and his family. But he also prayed, please God, save me from my brother. Because sometimes Esav appears as a friend. Sometimes Esav, the Goyim, welcomed the Jews into their land. And the Jews are afforded freedom and liberties and rights like everybody else. And that's just as well a danger. As a matter of fact, it's even more so a danger. Because when the Jews get freedom and are able to socialize and mingle in the host country that they're in, there's a great chance that the Jews will assimilate. As we see today in America. Ladies, you have to remember, we're in exile now. Although America is the home of the brave and land of the free, and God bless our country, but this is an exile. It's not the exile of Nazi Germany, nor it's the exile of Spain, but it's an exile nonetheless. And you have to remember that. And unfortunately, just as we lost 6 million Jews, Rahman al-Silan, in the times of the Holocaust, we lost already 6 million Jews to spiritual genocide, meaning they intermarried. They married Goyim Goyot. That's also a terrible loss. Some will argue that's even worse, because if you die Jewish, at least you still have Olam Abba. At least you still have an eternal afterlife. But if you die assimilated, the game's over. There is no afterlife. So some will say that a sweet exile has a bigger danger than a bitter exile. Yaakov was concerned about both situations, and therefore he says, "Hatzileni na miyad ahi miyad Esav, save me from the Esav that acts to me like a brother, and save me from Esav that acts to me like the brutal person. Save me from both situations." And maybe it's because of Yaakov, not maybe, certainly it's because of Yaakov's prayer that not only did he get saved, but we're saved, which is, it's a miracle of miracles. The majority of Jewry in America today is either conservative, reform, or unaffiliated. How many Jews are Orthodox? And we take it for granted because we live in New York. So we think, what do you mean? Everybody's Orthodox. Look at how many shoes we have. And this is a very small pocket. We're spoiled. The statistics are all not like New York or not like Brooklyn or not like two or three zip codes that we're living in. The majority of the world is not like this. Go across this country and go across the world and the Jews are faltering. Jews that don't even know that they're Jewish. So why are we here today? How did we make it? How did we still exist and not become assimilated? No doubt, we are the product of that prayer that Yaakov Avinu made 3,000 years ago and said, please God, save the Jews from the brotherly Esav. Save the Jews from the exile of America, that we shouldn't fall into total spiritual oblivion. And Baruch Hashem, we are the fortunate ones that are actually holding up the fort. You know, we're the last of the Mohicans. We're from a minority in a minority in a minority. So you can never underestimate your value, ladies. You know, the fact that God bless you all, you're religious, and we keep kosher homes, and you send your children to yeshiva, don't take that for granted. In God's eyes, we're like, it's an extinct. It doesn't exist anymore in this world. Borei Olam has us on a special list. Not too many thousands make that list. It's only a sign that we have to re-energize our efforts to keep to this level. But I saw a fantastic thought that's brought down by some of the Hachamim, the Beit HaLevi. This is when the Jews were in Egypt, which was also an exile. That happened to be an exile of the other face of Esav. That was a brutal exile. Slaves for 210 years, men and ladies working in slave camps. They didn't feed us like we were supposed to. They didn't treat us like we were supposed to. We worked 18-hour days. That's the Esav of the violent nature. So I saw some of the books bring down, if we can understand it, why did this happen? Why did God allow this to happen? And he writes that when the Jews came down to Egypt, originally they didn't live in Egypt proper. They lived in a separate city called Goshen. Yaakov Avinu masterminded that. When he came down with his family, his 70 children and grandchildren, he said, we're not living in Alexandria and we're not living in Cairo. That's where all the other Egyptians live. Ask Paro if we could live off the beaten track in a little area of our own. And Paro agreed. And the Jews for many years lived in like a ghetto called Goshen. And it was over there that Yaakov Avinu built the yeshiva. And the Jewish people were able to exist. And there was a separatist nation. And they didn't involve themselves with the Egyptian population, which was corrupt. And then what happened? Yaakov Avinu died. And all the tribes died. And then the Jews left the ghetto. They left Goshen. And they came into Egypt. And the Jews started to multiply. And now the Jews started to go to places where Jews never were before. The Midrash writes they were in the theaters. They were in the arenas. And all of a sudden the Egyptians turned around. They said, what are these Jews doing over here? I never saw Jews over here in this area. All of a sudden the restaurant, you couldn't get a seat in the restaurant. All the Jews, we never had a problem like this over here. And the Egyptians started to resent us. And they started to despise us. It says, "Vatemaleha aris otam." The land was everywhere you went. There's Jews, and the Egyptians could not tolerate us, and the slavery began. Says the Beit HaLevi, if you can imagine, it was a blessing, because It was the gezerot, it was the decrees of the Egyptians that kept us separate. If the Egyptians wouldn't have pushed us away, we probably would have become totally assimilated. It says already in the Midrash that the Jews in that time, who were circumcised, they were circumcised, but they started to cover their circumcision in order to make it look as if they weren't circumcised, because they wanted to fit in, they wanted to blend. And therefore God in His mercy sends the goyim against us in order to keep us separate, in order that we don't totally assimilate. So it is a beracha in disguise. It wasn't a punishment, says the Beit Halevi. It was a protection. It's like an insurance that we have. Borei Olam will never let the Jews totally get assimilated. Once we get too close, the goyim all of a sudden wake up and say, get back, you're past the border, we don't want you over here. That's what Hitler did in Nazi Germany. Where Jews in Germany were becoming totally assimilated, marrying, Hitler came along and said, he's going to check the lineage if your great-great-great-grandmother was Jewish. Go back to your side. You're Jewish. Sometimes God has to send the tyrant. Not that Hitler's going to get reward for this. Glad he's good. Hitler's burning in Gehinnom. He's not even Gehinnom. He's in Kfar Kela. He's in the worst place for eternity. And it's fact. No question to ask. But for us, the lesson is that if we don't separate ourselves, that's when anti-Semitism comes. The sleeping bear wakes up when the Jews get too close. And if we're reading about anti-Semitism today in the newspapers, in the magazines, you have to know that we bear the responsibility also. Not only politics in Israel, not only because of world opinion, etc. It's because maybe we're acting too much like the goyim in our lifestyles. And maybe we're modeling their behavior, and maybe we're modeling their dress, and maybe we're modeling their style, and maybe we're modeling their eating habits. And after a while, Borei Olam says, hey, what's the difference between my nation and their nation? So he sends the goyim to come along and say, hey, fellas, you're Jews, you're not us. Get out of here, go back to your way. That's one of the roots of anti-Semitism. And if we want to do something about it, you could send letters to your politicians. You could call the president, you could march on Fifth Avenue with signs. That's all very nice. But if you want to know the root of why this happens, it's because maybe we're crossing the border. Maybe we went over the line, even in the Orthodox community. Maybe we've crossed the line where we act very Jewish, but we have a lot of traces of goyim lifestyle in us. Whatever it is, without elaborating. And therefore anti-Semites come out of the woodworks all of a sudden and say, oh, what's going on over here? Look at the Jew. He wants to be like us. Get out of here. It's a beracha in disguise, might be. Of course, we pray Hashem Shomer Yisrael. Yaakov Abinu, when he's meeting Esav, he gives him a very big gift of all sorts of animals. We call it a gift, it's actually a bribe. Esav receives bribes. It's one of the ways to calm him down. Rav Aaron Cutler, Zichrono Livracha, used to wire money to the Germans to bribe them in order to save Jewish lives during the Holocaust. It's a flat-out bribe, but that's the way you deal. How did Rav Aaron Cutler know that's going to work? Because he knew Yaakov Avinu did it. And this is the blueprint. Whatever Yaakov Avinu does, that becomes the method to deal with goyim. He prayed. So therefore you have to know, you have to pray. When there's anti-Semitism in the world, when goyim are coming after us, you have to go to Tehillim readings and open the books and cry your heart out, because that's what he did. But he also gave gifts. He subjugated himself a little to Esav. So Rav Aaron wires money to the Germans. And it worked for a while. But it's interesting how he gave these gifts. The pasuk says, "V'revach tasim ben eder le'eder." He gave him all sorts of animals, but instead of giving all the animals, let's say, in one group, in one herd, he took some animals, put them in one section. Then he put a separation, then he put some more animals, a bunch of animals. And then a separation, another 30 animals. Then a separation, another 50 animals. He gave it to him in like increments, so when Esav is standing there, he sees one group come, and then another group, and then another group. He split the animals up into many groups. And Rashi tells us why. He says, in order to satiate the eye of Esav, in order that Esav, it should seem to him as if it's a lot, much more than it really is. Yeah, this is a technique, this is a style that Yaakov is teaching us over here. Which means, if he gave him, let's say altogether, I don't know, 1,000 animals. 1,000 animals is 1,000 animals no matter how you count it. You could put 1, 1, 1, 10, 10, it's the same thing. Bottom line, Esav at the end of the day knows what he's getting. But we learn from over here that people are very influenced by what they see. Intellectually, you can understand something. But if it's presented in a certain way, the eyes play tricks on people. Eyes are very deceiving. And therefore, you could put the same 1,000, but if you put it in a certain way, it looks like it's 10,000. But even though Esav knows that it's a sketch, it's a ploy, but the eyes already affect the person as if he thinks he's getting much more than he's really getting. Now that method was used by the Hafetz Chaim many years later when he was in Poland and the Goyim were making decrees in Poland, anti-Semites. So they came to the conclusion they have to bribe one of the officials. So they came up with a certain amount of money and they're going to go give it to the official. So as they're leaving the Hafetz Chaim, the rabbi calls them back and says, how do you plan on paying this official? They said, we're going to write him a check. He says, no. Pay him in cash in small bills. And they went, and they took who knows how many rubles, and they went, they piled it on the table like this in front of them, all stacks. And they asked the Hafetz Chaim, what did you say this for? He says, because I learned this from Yaakov Avinu. There's something to say about a perception. When a person looks at a stacked bunch of bills on the table, even though he knows it's the same amount that if they would have written a check, he becomes satiated by that. It becomes, he accepts it. The reason why I tell you this, we saw throughout history that it was the eyes of people, the way they saw things, that got them into the trouble that they ended up in. Hava, for example. What caused Hava to eat from the tree that we're still suffering today? No offense, ladies. What caused Hava to eat was, it says, V'chita avahi la'inayim. Because she saw it. Now, even though intellectually she knew God told her this is off limits, this you're not allowed to eat. But when you see it, it already, the eyes start to play tricks. The perception, it starts to dull your senses. You could know something 100%, but once you see the item in front of you, the brain becomes dulled. Wasn't that the same thing with Esav? Esav comes home last week, and 2 weeks Perashah we read. Esav comes home and right away he says, give me some of this red stuff. Again, Esav is bound by what he sees by his eyes. I saw an interesting thought in the Birkat HaMazon based on this. In the Birkat HaMazon, we thank God for the food that He gave us. We thank God, Behen, Behesed, Berevach, Uberachamim. We thank God for giving us the food with charitable graciousness. A Behen, what does Behen mean? God, we thank you for giving us the food in a charming way. What does it mean? A charming way. Hen is charm or grace. We talked about it last week in Tefillat HaDerech. Now I want to explain you what the word hen means in Birkat HaMazon. Does it matter what food looks like? Does it matter what food tastes like or smells like? Bottom line, the main thing is that it satiates you. If you were to eat a piece of food and swallow it, bottom line, in your stomach, it's all the same thing. It gives you the nutrients you need. So God technically could have made all food clear, opaque, tasteless, odorless, and every day you'd have to eat like tofu or something like that. You know, you have to eat a brick of this a day and finish, and you'll be satiated and you'll live to 120. God could have done that. But we thank Borei Olam, you created the food behen. You made the food charming. Every food has a color to it. And when you look at the color, it becomes appetizing. It becomes delectable. Every food has a shape to it. The roundness of an apple, that makes it charming to us. That makes it, we salivate when we see such a thing. And the smell of a food also. And therefore we thank Borei Olam not only for giving us the food, but for the marketing of the food, for the packaging of the food, for the way you present God, you gave it to us. Bechen. The presentation of God is what we thank Him for, not only for the final product, because again, we are affected by our senses, we are affected by what we see. And that's why maybe the Jews in the Midbar complained about the man. Even though the man tasted like anything in the world, you thought about a pizza, it tasted like a pizza, you thought about steak, it tasted like steak. What a great item. You just take and you have a kavanah in your brain and automatically it turns to that. But they were complaining because it didn't look like a steak. It didn't have the perception of what you were eating, and that already is not the same pleasure. There's an interesting halakha regarding bikur cholim, visiting the sick. Halakha says we're not supposed to visit the sick people early in the morning when they just wake up, nor should you visit the sick people at night before they're about to retire and go to sleep. Why? Listen to the interesting halakha. Gemara says this. Because if you visit a person in the morning when he wakes up, so they look stronger than they really are. Because they just slept, how many hours, now they're waking up, they're fresh. So the visitor might say, oh, he looks okay to me, so he doesn't have a problem. So he might not pray as hard. He might get the false impression that he's okay. If he comes at night, at the end of the day, so the patient looks sicker than he really is. And therefore the guy might walk in and say, wow, look at this guy. Ooh, I didn't know he's so bad. You know what? It doesn't even worth to pray for this guy anymore. It looks like he's in too much, it's over. So they say, come visit him in the middle of the day where you could see really the... So I saw the rabbis explain this halakha. We're talking about a person who's going to visit a sick person. He knows the prognosis. The guy who's making the visit knows exactly the amount of danger. So what's the matter when he visits him? The doctor tells him, you should know he's going to be okay, he's going to be fine, it's 3 days now. So visit him anytime. But the rabbis knew that when you see something, it affects your nature. You can see the chart, you can hear it from the doctor, but if you go early in the morning and you see the guy strong, already your eyes saw something that does not consistent with your facts that you know, and you'll be affected by what you see, and automatically it's going to affect your nature, and you're going to walk outside and have to pray, so look, he looked okay. And the same thing when you go at night. Look how careful you have to be by seeing things. Esav can get fooled. He says, it's the same 1,000 animals, but look, it looks like a lot. The Polish judge, the Polish police officer, when he sees the thousands of rubles on the table, he knows it's the same thing, but it satiates him. The lesson for us is, ladies, we have a custom that when we say Kiryat Shema, we cover our eyes. Where did that custom come from? Simply, we cover our eyes so we can have concentration. When you're looking around, you can't concentrate. But I'd like to tell you the deep reason why we cover our eyes in Shema. Because in Shema, we accept the oneness of God, and we accept that God is in control in the world, and we accept that God is right, and God is correct, and God doesn't make mistakes, and He's monitoring, and He's supervising. All the major principles of belief are in that one line, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. But you know what? We can all believe that. But when you look around the world, at least the way it looks, goes against that. We see people suffering. We see the Haman Lesinan, people that are sick. We see all the problems that Jews are having across the world. And when a Jew looks around and sees all these things, he cannot help in his mind say, wait, this is God, where's God, where's happening, where's the righteousness, where's the goodness, where's the reward for the mitzvot, where's the reward for the tzaddikim, look at these wicked people prospering. And therefore, we don't want our eyes that can play tricks on us to dull our intellect. And therefore, at that moment, every morning and every night, when we're about to accept the oneness of God, we close our eyes. We close our eyes as if not to look what's going on. The world seemingly contradicts all this. And therefore, the only way we can accept true emunah and acceptance, we have to close our eyes for a minute, so we don't get fooled by what we see. And that's a great lesson in life, ladies, that it's important not to get fooled by the perception of things, by what people perceive, but to know these things intellectually and work from his mind and not from his eyes. In this parasha, we have one of the 613 mitzvot. It's unfortunate that we don't spend enough time learning the mitzvot. When we talk about Torah, what is Torah, ladies? Torah is the mitzvot. Besides the stories, what is Torah? Torah is an instruction book. Torah is a manual. And if you don't know the 613 mitzvot, you don't know Torah. As a matter of fact, every mitzvah in the Torah has a Gemara. There's mitzvah of Shabbat. There's a whole Gemara that the rabbis study for years to understand that one mitzvah. There's the holiday of Sukkot. There's a whole Gemara that teaches us all the laws of Sukkot, etc., etc. In this week's parasha, there's one of the 613 mitzvot that is not so well known. And that's the law of Gid HaNasheh. What is Gid HaNasheh? So let me explain to you the mitzvah so you'll learn something. Yaakov Abinu in the parasha gets into a fight with an angel. The angel actually was the angel of Esav. Every person has an angel in heaven. The angel meets up with Yaakov Abinu and they start to wrestle. Yaakov Abinu comes out alive, which is a miracle in itself. He was able to overpower an angel. Shows you how holy Yaakov Abinu was. Yaakov is greater than a malach. Not too many people could beat an angel. But what happened? The angel took a shot and hit him in his leg. And Yaakov walked away limping. Which part of the leg did he get hit in? In the sciatic nerve. In Hebrew, we call that vein or that nerve, the sciatic, we call it Gid HaNasheh. Gid is the vein, HaNasheh is the name. So the Torah says, to commemorate what Yaakov Abinu, what happened to our forefather, that he got hit in that spot, so Jews do not eat the Gid HaNasheh in animals. Which means every animal has veins. And after the rabbi makes Shechita, that's the easy part. Shechita, the slaughtering, is the easy part. I don't want to gross anybody out, but you have to know the mitzvah. But after the Shechita comes the difficult part of deveining the animal. And every rabbi has to know, who's involved in this, which veins are kosher and which veins are not kosher. And God forbid, if a rabbi should make a mistake and leave the Gid HaNasheh in, Chas v'Shalom, people will eat this. It's one of the biggest avonot in the Torah, to eat the Gid HaNasheh. And happens to be the best meat of an animal is in the hindquarters of the animal. That's where the filet mignon comes from, that's where the T-bone steak comes from, and that's exactly where the Gid HaNasheh is. So a lot of people, what they do, the butchers, they don't even deal with it. They just cut off the hindquarters and they sell it to the goyim because they don't want to get involved taking the vein out. It's too difficult. They can sell it to the goyim and they can make a lot of money. That's why we don't find too many restaurants that serve kosher filet mignon, because it's so difficult to come by. But I want to ask you a question. Although we don't like to give reasons for mitzvot, the real reasons for the mitzvot is because God says you can't do it. But is there a reason for Gid HaNasheh? Is there a logic to it? Well, you say, Rabbi says, Yaakov got hit in the leg, and therefore we can, because he got hit in the leg, so we don't eat it. There has to be something deep. What does that mean? He got hit in the leg, so we don't eat it? So the Sefer HaChinuch says something brilliant. He writes that the Gid HaNasheh represents the eternity of the Jewish nation. Yaakov Abinu on that night was fighting with an angel, and the angel was out to kill him. That angel was the tyrant. That angel was coming with the final solution to rid the world of Jews. And that angel that night, his plan was, after he kills Yaakov, he's going to go kill Yaakov's wives, and he was planning on killing all his children. That night was the first Holocaust in history. And miracles of miracles, Yaakov comes out of this Holocaust intact. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's going to be a message for the generations, that the Goyim will never be able to rid the world of Jews. The Jew is eternal, he's invincible. And just like the world cannot exist without oxygen, the world will always have Jews. Hitler can try it and he'll fail. He'll come close, but he'll fail. But Or tried it and he failed. Ferdinand tried it and he failed. But we knew they were going to fail. We knew that there's no way, no tyrant could rid the world of Jews. The final solution will never happen. You know why? Because Yaakov Avinu made it alive. And if he got out alive, we will get out alive. But he got hit. He didn't come out unbruised, he got bruised. Says the Chinuch, that's a symbol that we're going to get beaten up. It doesn't mean we're going to have it easy. We're going to be in a lot of wrestling matches. And the Goyim are going to deal deadly, not deadly, but near deadly blows. We're going to walk away. There's always be a remnant. But anti-Semitism is going to be around forever, and the Jews are going to have to live with that. But the fact that we don't eat the Gidon Hashem is to remind us that at the end of the day, we'll still be around. The Romans that try to destroy us, they're gone, ladies. There's no more Romans, by the way. Go to Rome today, there's no Romans. There's people that live in Rome. And we look at the great Roman Empire. And we look at the Arch of Titus. Titus tried to get rid of all the Jews. And we're still around to tell the story. And we're standing in Rome at the Arch of Titus saying, hey, after Asha tried to kill us, Titus, I'm standing here. You failed. And we go to Egypt. And we walk in Cairo, we see pyramids, and we see great, it was everything in the great Egyptian Empire that tried to get rid of us. And we walk through the streets of Cairo, but oh, I'm still here, you failed. And we go to Greece, and we tell the Greeks the same thing. And we go to every single country on the map. We go to Russia, and we walk through the streets of Russia. Communists, you try to destroy us physically and spiritually. I'm still here with my yarmulke and my tzitzit. You failed. You didn't get us. But we knew this from the beginning. We knew the results before the war started. Yaakov Avinu could never be eradicated. He survived the first Holocaust, and therefore we will survive every other attempt to destroy us. But then it says, the next morning, after the fight was over, it says, Vayizrach lo hashemesh, it says, the sun rose for him. So the Gemara asks, the sun rose for him? What do you mean for him? The sun rises for everybody. Vayizrach lo hashemesh. It says that morning, the sun came out specifically for Yaakov and healed him. He walked away and the pain was healed. The sun cured him. Says the Chinuch, that the symbolism is that God is going to cause the sun to rise. That's the son of Mashiach. And Mashiach is going to come in that proper time, and he's going to heal the Jews from all their wounds and all their hurting and all their pain, and all those people that died are going to come back to life, and families are going to be reunited, and the people are going to see their loved ones. And the sun shone for Yaakov, and the sun is going to shine for us in the light of Mashiach. Sefer HaChinuch put such a beautiful understanding to this mitzvah. But it always bothered me, because if that's the reason for the mitzvah, when do we ever have a chance to remember this? It's not like we're ever confronted with a Gid HaNasheh. We'll never see a Gid HaNasheh in our lives. We don't eat the Gid HaNasheh. So when do you ever have a chance to remember this? You want to tell me, we eat matzah on Pesach. So every year when I look at the matzah, I remember, oh, this thing, that concept, that significance. But Gid HaNasheh is a negative commandment. The Torah says, don't eat it. So when did the Torah expect me to ponder upon this beautiful point that the Jews are an eternal nation and Yaakov survived and he made it? And the explanation is, ladies, by coming to class. God doesn't only want us to perform the mitzvot, He wants us to learn about the mitzvot. The fact that we came here today and learned about the law of Gida Nasheh, the mitzvah served its purpose. Because we reminded ourselves of what Borei Olam is trying to teach us. There's another reason I want to share with you on Gida Nasheh. Yaakov Avinu, as we learned in previous classes, represented the study of Torah. Last week we said how he stopped off to study for an extra 14 years in Yeshivat Shem Va'eved. That's after 63 years of intense learning in his father's house. And all he did is learn his whole life. The angel of Esav was threatened by Yaakov Avinu. Listen closely to what I'm going to tell you. How come the angel didn't go after Avraham Avinu? Do you think the angel liked Avraham any more than he likes Yitzhak? Avraham's a very religious man. So it's up to me, kill Avraham, go after him. Hey, let him, Avraham, no problem. Yitzhak! Yitzhak's a big tzaddik. How come the angel didn't go after him? The angel's only threatened from Yaakov. I'll tell you why, and learn this secret. This is the key to our existence. Avraham Avinu represents chesed, charity, benevolence, kindness, hospitality. And we are charitable people and kind people and generous people only because we're the descendants of Avraham Avinu. We have that gene of Avraham Avinu in us. Jews by nature are kind and more charitable than other people. That's because we have a father who was Ish Chesed. But you know what? The angel of Esav said, if that's all the Jews are, kind, charitable people, that will not be able to keep them a nation. Chesed cannot maintain a people. The Goyim also do Chesed. Maybe not like me, but they do Chesed. The conservative and the reform, they also do chesed. They have their charities. They have their organizations. Chesed cannot produce a perpetuation of a people. You need it. It's a pillar. It's a pillar. But it's not the item. So the angel tells Avraham, good luck, be successful, go. I have no problem with you. Then Yitzhak came. Yitzhak represents prayer. He was a sacrifice. Sacrifices are connected to prayer. Prayer is very important. Prayer is actually a pillar of the world. How much do we enforce praying? But you know what? The Satan says, I'm not threatened by Yitzhak. Let them build synagogues. Let them build shuls. The conservative reform also build temples. The Arabs build mosques. And the Christian build churches. Houses of worship cannot keep a people a people. If all they're doing is chesed and praying all day long, come a time the Jewish people will be lost, they'll be assimilated. And then what? Came Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu's Torah. He learns Torah. Now the Satan says, now I'm in trouble. Because if he makes it, if he's able to exist, and the Jewish people who learn Torah, that's it, they have a nation. We are a people because we learn. Take this book away from us, we're gone. The conservative reform don't learn Torah. They don't study the Torah. They don't study Gemara. That's why they're all assimilated. That's why today the conservative reform have to come along and say that Goyim are considered Jewish. If your father is Jewish, you're Jewish. Well, I'd have to say that because they're running out of customers. Everybody's goyim. Everybody's assimilating. So they don't have a minyan anymore. So they have to start taking goyim and claiming that. Why did that happen to them, ladies? Are they charitable? Yes. Do they pray in temple? Yes. So what is it then? What are they missing? Which ingredient are they missing? This right here. They don't learn. They don't open the book. They don't study the mitzvot. They don't have rabbis sitting and learning all day long and disseminating the Torah to the masses. And that's what the angel said. If Yaakov Abinu makes it, I'm doomed. Thank God the angel wasn't able to get Yaakov. Yaakov was able to hold his own, but he got him in his legs. Says the Zohar, what does the legs of a person represent? Support. The angel was able to put a blow, not to the learners of Torah, but to the supporters of Torah. That's what Zohar says. And that's why today, the most difficult thing to collect for is for yeshivot. Go to a person and say, I'm collecting because they're hungry people. Oh, hungry people. Nobody wants to hear about hungry people. In a second, everyone, and rightfully so. We have to give money. There's no question. Go to a person and say, we're building a synagogue. Oh, building a synagogue. Give me 10 seats. Give me 5 seats. Give me the rabbi's office. Give me chandeliers. Give me mezuzot. Everybody gets excited building synagogue. And then go to a fellow and say, we're collecting for the yeshiva. They're studying Torah. Ah, leave me alone with Torah. Leave me alone with rabbi studying. Why is it so difficult? Why is it such a challenge to give money to Torah? I'll tell you why. Because the Yetzer Hara, when the angel hit Yaakov, he caused the negativity to the supporters. He figured if I can't go after the Torah itself, I'll go through the back door. If nobody supports it, there won't be any Torah. And therefore, if there's no Torah, there's no people. And therefore, he made it so difficult. And that's why every person has to know, when you're solicited for Torah, at that point, the Satan is working on you not to give. Because he knows if you don't give, he wins. And if you overcome and you give generously, that's as if you take the Satan in a lock. He said, you didn't get me. You weren't able to cause that negativity in my mind. And that's a lesson to us, ladies, not only that we should continue studying and have our children continue studying, but it's also a lesson in our attitude when it comes to the support of these. And that's what Gidon Asher represents to us. Gidon Asher represents us the importance of the support of Torah. And Yaakov Avinu support is the representative of the learner of Torah. It's a good time to mention Rabbi Diamond's event. I have one more thought to say, but I will mention it now because I love the rabbi and he deserves everything. They told me to announce, and I don't make announcements in this class, but this I will, that they're honoring the rabbi, Rabbi Diamond, God willing, this Monday, December 15th at Club 26. Chinese auction, lunch, etc. Ladies, this is Torah. This is exactly what we're talking about. The support of Torah, Hachamim sitting and learning and studying. This is what the Satan was trying to destroy. And thank God he wasn't able. But I want to tell you one last thought and I'll let you go. On this Gidon Asher. I saw one of the rabbis bring down that when Yaakov Avinu met this angel, it was at night and he was alone. Actually, he was traveling with his family. He forgot something, so he told him, you go, or you wait here, I'm going to go get what I forgot, and then he saw the angel. I saw one of the rabbis say, the reason why we can't eat Gidon Asher is because it's a claim against the children of Yaakov Avinu. How did you let your father go back alone? How didn't you escort him? Your father went back alone. Maybe if you went with him, the angel wouldn't have got him. Maybe wouldn't have dealt a blow to his Gidon Asher. And from here, it's a punishment. You Jews, you can't have the T-bone steak anymore. You can't have the filet mignon anymore because you didn't respect your father like you should have. You should have escorted him. And from here, we learn a great lesson, Hachamim say, when it comes to escorting guests. The Gemara says, it's a mitzvah to host guests, to feed guests, to entertain guests. But there's one mitzvah that's maybe neglected, which is just as great, to walk the guests out. Mm-hmm. Not enough only to open the door for them, but even to walk them out on the porch, even a few steps down. The Gemara says the reward for escorting guests outside is immeasurable. Immeasurable, the Gemara says in Sotah. And they learn it from a story in the Navi. The Jews were trying to conquer the different cities in Israel in the times of Yehoshua. There was a city called Luz. Not like the Delhi on King's Highway. It's a different Luz. That's the first Luz. So the city of Luz, they couldn't find how to enter the city. It was like a city without an entrance. I can't figure out how that was, but they didn't know how to access it. All of a sudden, they saw a guy who came out of the city. So they asked him, how did you get in? How did you get in there? So he just made a motion with his head, and he nodded towards a certain tree. And they went to the tree, and sure enough, they found there was like a trap door, and they went in, and they ended up conquering the whole city of Luz. They killed everybody. But that guy who did them the favor by showing them where the tree was, they kept him alive, his children alive, his family alive. And forever there was a pact between the Jewish people and that family. We don't touch them. We kill everybody in Israel or the Goyim, but this family is protected forever. Why? Because he moved his head 3 inches in order to show somebody where the door is. Comes the Hachamim and says, if that's the reward for just nodding your head towards a tree, it brought life to him and his children and grandchildren. How much more so when we not only nod our guests to the door, but we actually walk them to the door and then walk them out and escort them out the house? How much more so is that going to bring us life to us and our children? The Gedolim, I saw the Gedolim. Hakam Ben Sion used to escort his guests, Alav Shalom, in his slippers. He used to go out when he was sick. He couldn't walk in order to give the mitzvah of Levayav, escorting guests. The Zohar writes, it protects the guest. Which means there's a certain protection that the guest needs. He knows how to get home. We know that. He's going 2 blocks away. But when you walk with him, there's certain malachim that escort the guest there. And therefore, we should not minimize this great mitzvah that we also learn from the mitzvah of Yid HaNasheh. And now you learned one of the mitzvot in the Torah as we're supposed to. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.